once you're free to, you know, be whoever you want to be in the game, it helps you kind of sink into that character.
It's a cool way to be to, yeah, attract those like-minded people.
Something nerdy is going to happen, and we're going to make it cool, I think.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Nerdy. And in this case, again, about the floor, as you know, something that really caught my eye and I was very fascinated by. And now that the show is over, I think it's a great time to talk to somebody who had one of the most impressive runs, I think, in the entirety of the show, which is Gene, who I have with me here today. So, Gene, if you want to go ahead and say hi and introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. It's King Gene, also known as Gene the Winning Machine. Gene McGee and the place to be from the floor. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, definitely. I know a little bit about the process of, you know, getting on the floor and all of that, of course, from talking to Tom and Lindsay. But I'm curious, a couple things from your perspective. First of all, what was your journey to get on the floor? Because it sounds like that is a little bit different from person to person.
Absolutely. Everybody got on the show a different way. My story started back in June, a few months ago. I was coming back from Cleveland, coming back from my girlfriend's stepmom's birthday, just landed back home in Orlando, Florida, turned my phone on, and then I get a message from an acquaintance of mine, Charles. Now, Charles, you know, from the floor, he had toys. That was his, but me and him were acquaintances. I would say, like, we know of each other. We know the same people, but we haven't really hung out. But I get a message from Charles as soon as I turn my phone on as we're taxiing in Orlando. He sends this picture, this Instagram picture. It just said now casting trivia. It had nothing about the floor, nothing specific. He was like, hey, you're good at trivia. And I'm assuming, I think he sent this out to a few of our trivia friends because a friend of ours named Simon or John, he's a alias, he's a trivia show in Orlando, the Simon Time Trivia Show. Me and Simon used to host trivia together, and Charles knows both of us, so I'm assuming he sent it out to all his trivia buddies. Well, I actually answered it. I'm like, I'm sitting on this plane, I had nothing to do, because the taxi takes a really long time in Orlando, good 5-10 minutes just to get to the gate. So he's like, hey, you're good at trivia, you should fill out this application for this game show. He's like, I already filled it out, I'm ready on to the next step. So I'm like, I'm literally doing nothing, sure, why not? So I fill out the application. And then it asks if you have a valid passport, which I do, which I haven't really used, but I haven't always kept up with it because you never know. Filled it out, and I'm like, all right, Charles. We also call him Milo because that's his alias. Now, the reason why these guys have aliases, side note, because they're both professional wrestlers too, so on the independent circuit. So Charles is known as Milo Beasley, and John is known as Simon Says. So they both used to wrestle against each other on the independent circuit, which is why you hear me say two names, just the same guy. So you hear me say Charles or Milo, Simon or John, they're actually the same guy. So anyway, so Milo, I was like, all right, did you fill out? I was like, I filled it out. All right, I thought that was it. I filled it out, good. He's like, all right, now here's what I want you to do. I want you to send an Instagram message to this person named Kid Cadets on Instagram. I'm like, okay, also known as Heather, also I guess they're wrestling related. I'm like, sure, okay, I'll DM a stranger. It feels weird being a guy DMing. I mean, I promise I'm never, you know, slide in a DM type guy. But so hey, Kid Cadet, Heather, I'm a friend of Milo, Charles, you know, all these aliases. I filled out the application for this game show. He told me to reach out to you. And she's like, great. Do you have a valid passport? I was like, yeah. I'm like, what a weird question. But yes. She was like, all right, cool. I'm going to go ahead and forward your information to the casting team. So I realized she was helping the casting team because she's also a game show, reality show recruiter. She also recruits for American Idol and other shows. didn't know any of this. So basically, I knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody. And it started from there. Then I got the Zoom interview, and that's my journey from there. It just kind of kept going and going. It didn't feel real. I'm like, this isn't real. This is, any day it's going to be like, oh, no, I'm just kidding. And I'm like, well, what was the whole thing with the passport in the beginning? They're like, we can't tell you much, but we can say the country is friendly, lucky, and green. And that's all we can tell. Oh, okay. All right. Then I'm like, I won't believe a thing until I see a plane ticket with my name to Ireland. Other than that, it's, and until I saw that Aer Lingus, G McGee, Orlando to Dublin, I'm like, oh, this is real. Oh, I'm really doing this. Oh, okay. All right.
That's pretty amazing. Now, I think one of the most interesting things for me is, you know, obviously, like, they're showing the contestants and they're showing what people's, like, backgrounds and professions are. Obviously, it sounds like, you know, you've been involved in trivia, and so that would have significantly helped you on the floor. But absolutely. did working in a theme park at all help you with your time on the floor?
Yes. So, as you see on the show, it says theme park performer. But side note, they got my age wrong. They had me as 40. I'm actually 45. I'm turning 46 this year, but I'll take it, you know? You know, I haven't been 40 in a while, so I'm okay with that. So here's where I feel like it kicked in. So early on, I'm watching everybody. If you get a chance, if you don't go until later, you get to kind of strategize. You can be like, okay, I would do this or I would do that. One thing I noticed, and it was almost competitiveness, not so much at the game, but as an entertaining person, because almost everybody on the show had some, like, amazing quips or one-liners, or I'm like, man, and they were regular people. They were like lawyers, like Victoria, or professors, like Nick, or the car guy, Greg, early on, and Sid from the beginning. I'm like, everybody is, like, just killing it, and they're not performers. These are real kind of 9-to-5ers. And I was like, I have to bring it. I have to bring it. So fortunately, you know, I have a lot of, I would say, back pocket material or just things that I've done in the theme parks at, you know, Universal, Disney, SeaWorld. And I've worked at Six Flags Over Georgia. That was my start back in the early 90s, but in the mid 90s, I should say. But mostly Universal, SeaWorld, and Disney, is that's where Gene McGee and the Place to Be came from. That came from the parks, and just that knowing, you know, when to turn it on and interact, and the improv basics of yes and agreeing with somebody, whatever it is, and just adding on top of it, kind of just going along with it. But I will say it was a bit intimidating. Like, I performed in front of stadiums. I performed on the castle stage of Magic Kingdom. But being on that podium, it was a different feel. I mean, it was only 100 people in the audience, but those lights were bright. And it was like, this is a different feel. It was weird because now you're kind of performing, but not really, because it's testing what's at the front of your mind. Can you answer these questions, like, on the spot? Like, we don't get any advance notice. We didn't get a rehearsal. There was no practice round. All of what you saw was in real time. And so it just, but I feel like being a performer in front of people, as soon as I did that one duel, the comedians with Anne, then my body settled, because that's how it usually is as a performer. The first performance, you kind of jittery, and you use that energy. But as soon as you do it once, because at the theme parks, we do things over and over again. You do it once, it's like, okay, your body knows this is what it is. So I actually did relax a little bit more as it went on. And if you watch on the show, I'm doing this breathing technique where I close my eyes, breathe in, breathe out. I got that from Stephanie. Stephanie was like, hey, gang, I've been winning a lot. She was trying to help us all win money. She was like, I want to help you all. So, you're getting this now, but we were all getting along and friendly and giving each other tips. And in the very, I don't know if Tom and Lindsay mentioned this, but in the very beginning, like during our first lunch breaks, the producers came in and was like, hey, where's the trash talk? Where's the, because we weren't trash talking. We were high-fiving. Yeah, I mean, kudos to the casting team. that cast these personalities of friendly, outgoing, you know, Americans, because the reason why I've needed a passport, this is all in Ireland. So Americans from every background, every demographic possible, but we all got along, which someone was like an anomaly for some people. They're like, wait a minute, they're all different backgrounds, but they're getting along. But it's like, well, we have a passport. We are well-traveled Americans that have, you know, fun personality. So kudos to the casting team for putting that together, because hey, we are all to this day still messaging each other on WhatsApp, still checking in with each other when we travel to another city. I just came from Philadelphia a couple days ago, and I met up with Mike, who did the flags battle with Joel. You know, we call Mike Dino Mike. But Mike is also a tour guide like Tom, but they work for rival tour agencies. So, and when people come to Orlando, we hang out sometimes. If I have comp tickets to Universal, I've hung out with Claire and Andrew Trotter and Eugene and Stephanie and Charles at Universal Studios. So it's a bond. It is a serious, almost trauma bond, because filming the floor, whoo, boy, that was, we were in the trenches, as they say.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I think you make a really great point about like having the entertainment background and making it a little bit easier from like the stress of it all perspective, just because you're used to being in front of people. And I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, I would say most people aren't used to being in front of people in that way, like with the spotlights on and everything. I mean, I have a podcast, so I'm sitting behind a screen. It's not quite that like, you know, stressful or intimidating, but I've been to a TV filming before, and watching it on TV versus seeing how things happen in the filming, it's intense.
It is. But the cool thing is, to help break up the tension, there was a warm-up host by the name of Stuart Holdham. He's actually from the UK, and he's a warm-up host for like Love Island and all these others. He was able to help kind of lighten the mood up. And I told Stuart, I do what he does in America. So I also do warm-up or pumping the crowd up before a show. So he would get the audio guys to play music. They'd play like Dancing Queen, and we were like dancing on the floor, or just, you know, have a moment of levity while like they were setting up the next shot, and the hair, makeup touch us up, or we get like little snacks and sips of water, totally pampered. So it was tough, but they did. The first day was tough, and then they got better as they went on once they figured out the rhythm of the show. But yeah, it was incredible just being out there.
For sure. Now, one thing that I observed that I was really curious to get your take on is that I can definitely see playing the game, the perspective of wanting to collect the territory, because, you know, that puts you in a better position for the $20,000. But yes, at the same time, it also makes you a much bigger target, because the randomizer is so much more likely to land on people around you, and the temptation for them to go after the big territory is so high. And I mean, you see that with having like essentially four people that were in the corners with their own tiny little pieces of territory lasting pretty much almost to the very end. So to me, it seemed that it was more strategic to be like, I've got my little piece of land and I'm just going to sit here because nobody's probably going to come for it. I mean, was that like something that you had seen in doing it?
I didn't really notice it until I had all that area after episode 7. And I was talking to Lindsay, because Lindsay was all alone because all of her friends were gone. Like, she was getting along with everybody in that corner, and she was the only one left. So I would go down and say hi. Me and Lindsay became friends after that. I heard, funny thing is, I didn't get to know Tom, because me and Tom were never near each other. During the floor in the lunch room, in the lunch area, we also have our different tables. It wasn't always your floor mate, so you got to know different people. But I actually didn't get to know Tom, but I got to know Lindsay, because I'll walk over to her. And then I realized, I was like, oh, nobody can challenge you. You are in the, and then Tiffany was another corner, And me and her were talking. Me and her actually from, I'm from Atlanta originally, so we were talking Atlanta, and then she had hip hop, and I'm like, Tiffany, you know, I there is a good chance I will come after you. She's like, I've been waiting. Get me out of this corner, please. I'm a DJ. I wanna get out and represent hip hop. So we would, you know, tell, I mean, at least for me, I'm like, hey, heads up. Good chance I'm coming for you. But Lindsay, I was not coming for Lindsay at all. I was like, that my category is pop culture. I'm a pop culture, as I said on the show, mainly 80s, 90s. So yeah, those corners, especially Tiffany and Lindsay, are the ones I really talk to. And Jacqueline, I did talk to on occasion, you know, kind of talk here and there, but I wasn't even like looking because she had international foods. Fortunately, all of the categories I would have chosen before, you know, during the Zoom interview, with every category, you saw me like 80s TV, one hit wonders. And one hit wonders was would have been my specialty. I told them I was big on 80s, 90s music, especially 80s music. So that's something I would have gone for. But once I got it from Anne, I was like, oh, this is my category. I'm going to go back to the floor because I want to defend this. The show, as Jacqueline says, this is chess, not checkers. You know, if I had thought a few steps ahead, I could have stayed up there and then gone on my historic run and then get to 20,000. But I was like, oh, wait, I love One Hit Wonders. I want to play this out. Let me go back to the floor. Because, you know, once you're up there and you challenge somebody, you know, it's just a different feel. And it's just like, oh man, you know what? I mean, I don't want to say hindsight. Like, I'm glad I did what I did. You know, what I was thinking about, oh, if I would have done that. But no, in that moment, I made the best decision at the time. And I'm still happy with everything I did. And it's just crazy just to see it played back. Like, oh, that's right. Yeah, I did do that. Or, oh, I totally forgot some of the things that I said too. So, you know, it's, and I still haven't fully watched episode 9 and 10. I've watched it during a watch party in Atlantic City because I was doing a gig there, but it was at a big restaurant. I was very distracted. But shortly after this Zoom call, me and my girlfriend are just going to sit down and watch 9 and 10 and just kind of relive those moments, you know, like snapshot in time now.
For sure. Now I'm also curious because you kind of mentioned that a little bit too, like the decision to go back to the floor or the decision to play. And it's funny because a lot of the categories that you were choosing were ones that I probably would have gravitated to as well. But you really have to think about like if you stay, then choosing a category that you think that you can actually win. Or if you've inherited a category that you're not comfortable with, like the fashion situation. I mean, that
Oh.
played out heavily at the very end of the thing.
Yeah.
Like which one do you go with? I mean, sometimes I would think that might be a very difficult decision.
It was, I mean, and I didn't even realize it actually until fairly recently because I was going on my run because I didn't want fashion icons. So I had no choice but to stay up there. I was like, oh, that's right. I'm not inheriting these categories because once you play a category, then it's done. So I was like, oh, that's right. I'm not inheriting, I'm beating them, but retaining what I had. I was like, oh man, I'm here. I'm fashion icons is not my thing. So here's what happened between episode 9 and 10. Now, I don't want to make any excuses. Matt beat me fair and square. No excuses. But here's what happened between episode 9 and 10 that could have played a factor. I could have played better. But who knows? Episode 9 is done. You know, Matt got the extra 20,000 because I didn't challenge him. I demand Claire was on her way doing her exit interviews. And now we're back at the break room having dinner. It's very quiet because there's only, I think, 9 of us. And it's like, wow, man, it's really quiet. So I go to get my dinner that day. Production assistant comes up like, hey, Gene, we need to record your interviews because I haven't done any interviews the whole time. Now, we filmed the show Wednesday through Sunday. So this was Sunday. This was the last day of filming. And people have been doing interviews, but there's so many of us. But they're like, hey, we can grab your interviews. So I go get up. They're like, oh, you probably taking lunch with you. I'm like, oh, I'll be right back. I mean, it can't take that long, can it? And I was, whew, I should have listened. I should have listened. So I get to the one-on-one interview with, I think her name was Faye. I had two interviews. There's Faye and then there was Muhammad. We met them early on. And Faye said one thing I had no idea. And I feel like, I don't say it almost affected me, but it did something in my brain. She was like, Gene, just so you know, you're about to play more duels than anybody in the show. And you have won more. I won six duels, which I didn't know at the time. She's not keeping track. She was like, you have won six duels. And that is the most on the show. And no one's going to catch up to that, no matter what happens. And something in my brain just kind of clicked off. I'm like, oh, well, I'm good. I mean, I lost that killer. It almost kind of quenched that fire. Like, oh, all right. I made history on a game show, which is why I said tonight I'm making history, because I won so much and I played more than anybody. So when you hear that quote in episode 7, when you hear me say there's no stop in me, there's no stopping me, that was in reference to my streak. They just put it in a different, they just, the editing was crazy. They just put that before episode 7, before my duel with Anne. But I said that, I was like, oh, I'm on the streak. I'm on a roll in control. You know, there's no stop in me. There's no stop in me. They're saying all these things. It's so goofy because a lot of the stuff is like video game. It's a lot of my trash talk is actually nerdy video game talk. It's all references to video games. But it's the way they just edit it. Cause I was laughing the whole time. It's so absurd, but I know what they wanted. So I'm doing all these interviews, and it was going on for a while. It went on for a good hour or so, and they're like, okay, this duel you just did, talk about this, but talk about it in present tense. Now talk about this, now talk about this. But I'm just feeling like, man, you know, I made history in the show. I'm good, you know. They're like, well, what's your plan? And for episode 10, I'm like, well, we ended episode 9 on a cliffhanger, but I want to start episode 10 on a banger. I'm going to challenge Matt right from the jump. To be honest, I was ready to go. I was kind of exhausted and tired. I was like, I made history. I was like, you know what? I didn't want to be there any longer, to be honest, to be 100%. I was done. Of course, the money would have been nice. Don't get me wrong. $250,000 would have been nice. But in that moment, I feel like I accomplished what I set out to do, was to be entertaining on TV. One of the reasons why, and a lot of us felt this way, was the free trip to Ireland. As soon as that plane landed in Dublin, I was like, this is awesome. I didn't pay for any of this. I'm on a free Irish vacation right now. So anything after this is icing on the cake. And then I just went on this amazing run that no one else could top. So all these things had to play in my head, and I just kind of, the dial kind of went off. And then on top of that, if you also notice in episode 10, I'm on the other side of the podium. If you're looking at the TV, on the left side of the podium, my streak was all on the right side of the podium. So it could be even, you know, how we're creatures of habits, how you just kind of get used to it and your brain adjusts and it just kind of clicks in. So now I'm on a different side of the podium. My brain is like, all right, we're good. So then I challenged Matt. Athletes are going. I see, you know, with Michael Jordan, Babe Ruth, easy. And then I see Shohei Ohtani, but it was a different photo. It was his original before he came to America, because I know him in his Angels uniform. I watch ESPN. I really do watch sports, but it threw me off. And I was like, wait, is that the other Japanese? And I'm gonna, and we don't see the clock. We don't see the 45 seconds. So I know I don't have time to, I don't have time to hem and haw. So I'm just like, okay, I got to move on. All right. And then Michaela Maroney, and I knew she was. So I was like, Michaela. And then my brain was like, nope, we're done. And I'm like, Michaela. It stopped. It was like, at that point that Michaela Maroney, that's when I knew I was cooked. I was like, you know what? We're done. Where my brain was like, you are done. I was like, pass. And then FloJo, Jackie Jordan Kersey comes up. And I'm just like, yep, pass. Then Aaron Judge from the Yankees, I'm like, I know who you are, but it's a lost cause. and then Patrick Mahomes. But yeah, they the psychology was very interesting. But I wasn't upset because right after that, Rob Lowe was like, "Gene, you know, you had it. You didn't miss until you did. You know, you're an amazing competitor. You are a legend of the floor." And the fact that Rob Lowe called me a legend of the floor and called me amazing competitor, that made this whole thing work. That pretty much was it. I mean, the money would have been nice, don't get me wrong. But then at the same time, the money thing, psychologically thinking, when everybody knows you have money, then people come out of the woodworks. "Hey, I know you have money now. Hey, buddy, pal, remember me?" Remember, the family comes out of the woodworks. So in a way, I'm kind of glad I didn't win all that money because now people aren't asking me for money. But I got like the clout and the attention, or it was all good for me. So when I got, you know, eliminated, I was actually relieved. As soon as they took that mic off, actually the shirt I'm wearing, this is actually the shirt I wore on the show.
Okay.
This is it. I've only worn this maybe one other time for my first watch party. So I saved up for special occasions. So I took the mic off and I was like, it was just like, oh, and they were like, "You're so good. We're rooting for you." And I'm like, I'm happy. I'm done. It was a sigh of relief once I was done. I was ready to be done. So I'm still happy to this day, you know?
Yeah, for sure. One other thing that I wanted to ask you about, just because I don't think this was so much a thing when I talked to Tom and Lindsay, but it's something that I observed throughout watching the episodes. I did notice that for some of the duels that people would give like a partial answer, like a first name or last name, and that it was fine sometimes, but then other times it had to be super specific. And there were times where I even saw contestants looking very frustrated because they felt that they properly answered the prompt and were not getting credit for it. So I'm just really curious from your perspective, because that seemed like that was something that really stood out to me.
Yeah, so one thing that I had noticed was during the Andrew Trotter's Andrew Trotter and Nick, in episode 8, was it? The Professor episode where Nick just went on his hot streak. I noticed Andrew had said, there was a picture of Roosevelt popped up. And he was like, "Roosevelt," because we were going by last names. And it didn't go. And I'm like, me and Lindsay are kind of together, kind of answering. We all kind of play along as well, too. We just keep quiet because, you know, people can hear us. And I was like, "Why didn't they take?" She was like, "There's a Franklin Roosevelt, there's a Teddy Roosevelt." I was like, "Oh, okay." So I'm assuming if it's the same last name, you have to have the first name or last name only. Like where the A-listers duel that I think Zinni had early on, she was on last names. Boom, boom, like McConaughey, you know, Jolie or something like that. She was last names. Those are identifiable last names where people didn't share that last name. But there were a few, I want to say like discrepancies. There's a few things you guys didn't see that got cut out of the broadcast. Because we had an adjudicator backstage, and he introduced himself to us the night before the tapings, before we filmed anything. He's like, "Hey, I'm a third-party adjudicator. If you have any issues with the show, I'm not connected to Fox. I'm not connected to this Irish team. I'm an independent person. If you have an issue, I legally have to address your problem. So just let me know, and we will review the tape." And there was a couple instances. One I remember, the fast food duels, where the logo for Shake Shack came up, and she said Shake Shake, and they counted as correct, and then it went on to the next pitcher, and we were all like, whoa, hold up, and then everything stopped. I mean, game stopped. Adjudicators came out. They have to separate the contestants, so they have to go walk back down the platform so they're not at the podium facing each other, and they have somebody with them. And so they, you know, looked over the footage and were like, "Yep, that's a mistake." So then they had to start from another, I want to say, I think RBs or something. And then they had to go back up again and restart the duel. And you never would have known. The editing was seamless. And there was a few others that also happened. I think in the season finale, episode 9 or 10, the snacks, where to this day, we feel like that it definitely was like, oh, very questionable. And I want to say, I forget her name at the moment, but she was like, no, this isn't right. And she, I think, adjudicator had to come and address it. And now we don't know what was said, but she did protest, rightfully so. They were like the potato chips and the...
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking of, just like saying chips, but it has to be potato chips. I'm like...
Potato chips. It was like, what? I mean, I guess are there other types of chips or... And then we realized that they're also in Ireland, so chips are crisps, and you know, fries are chips and all that. But even though I'm sure they had Americans back there, obviously, because it was mostly Americans, but yeah, we were, and then I think that threw her off, because as soon as you think you know something, and you say it, and it doesn't go, you're just like, oh. So Nick had an amazing strategy, because me and Nick shared a break room, break table. Nick, when he was studying, because Nick got instruments, that was not his category. That's another topic about us not having our categories. Nick had to study categories because he's like a chemical engineer, a professor in New Orleans, but he knows how to study. The dude is super smart. So he would have three answers in succession because you don't penalize for wrong answers. So he would say, you know, three instruments back to back, like, you know, trombone, saxophone, clarinet, you know, kind of boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. So you wouldn't get tripped up if it wasn't the right answer. You just kind of, but sometimes that's difficult. Sometimes like, oh, I know what that is. And you say it, nothing happens. And since we don't see the time, we don't know if 2 seconds went by or 10 seconds went by. So, and your brain is like, I mean, some people, as you see, just kind of froze up. They just didn't know what to do. And someone like me is like, if I don't get it first couple guests pass, you know, especially in the categories I was good in. So I'm like, pass, I don't get the next one. I don't get it. But if, with the exception of the athletes, I knew, yeah, my brain was just had stopped. But yeah, but we could have at any time raised our hand and objected and asked for the adjudicator, and they legally had to come out and address our concern. So, but there were still some questionable calls, don't get me wrong, with that. We all saw it and we were there too. We're like, we don't think that's right. But then at the same time, you don't want to be a troublemaker. You don't want to be known as that person, especially if it's not affecting you. Affecting you is like, well, I mean, I kind of want to stick up for that person, but do you want to be the you know, the squeaky wheel that gets the grease kind of? I mean, we know they can't retaliate, but you don't want to be seen as difficult. I mean, there's so many different things going on, and we're in another country. And on top of all this, we're all running on a different sleep schedule because Ireland is, what, 7-8 hours ahead of us. So we all didn't have that good of sleep, too. That's another thing that plays into it. A lot of us were getting back late, and some were couldn't sleep or wake up. Me, I'd wake up at 3:30 a.m. on the dot, like clockwork, every single time. So there are a lot of psychology goes behind the floor and shows like this that you don't see. Like, why did they make that decision? What was going on? And a lot of factors play into it. So, yeah, the show behind the show is intense, to be honest.
Definitely. And that's a big reason why I love the opportunity, you know, having you on to get some more insight, because I'm sure that people would love to know, you know, more about the process that they don't see on TV. And I think that it's fascinating.
It is. It's, I mean, it kind of is what you see, but more. There's so much more just playing into it and just standing there, just clapping. We're basically audience members. It takes a toll on you. So when you finally get up there, you know, hopefully your brain is still engaged. I mean, it does kind of perk you up a bit, kind of like a nice coffee shot of, all right, I'm here. All right, the lights are on. I'm talking to Rob Lowe. And Rob Lowe was great to talk to. In between setups, while they're setting up for the next shot, he's standing there. Sometimes he's looking at a tablet, getting information on us to make sure, you know, we are okay, you are so and so. But you can just talk to him. He was easy to talk to up there, especially after you establish a rapport, because I've been up there a few times. So I was able to talk to Rob Lowe like we were buddies. We were talking about 80s pop culture because that's my specialty. And Rob Lowe was like, Gene, you probably know more about 80s pop culture than I do. I'm like, how in the world? He's like, I was working in the 80s. I was pop culture. I didn't get to watch too many of these things. You probably know a lot. I'm like, you know, I didn't think about that. You're right. We talked about 80s catchphrases. He's like, there's a lot of catchphrases. And I'm like, Rob, I love a catchphrase that you have. And he's like, well, I don't have an 80s catchphrase. So I'm like, well, not 80s catchphrase, but I always love your catchphrase on Parks and Rec when you go, Ann Perkins. He's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, I'm like, should I ask? I was like, you know what? When am I going to do it? I'm like, Rob, can you do the Ann Perkins thing for me? And he immediately, Ann Perkins, no hesitation. I was like, dude, that was so awesome. And I was like, Rob, how'd you come up with Chris Traeger? Like, how do you, what's the process? And he just went right into it. He was like, oh, well, just long story short, a combination of his two celebrity friends, one being Tom Cruise. First of all, he's name dropping Tom Cruise, like he's a poker buddy, which probably is. He was like, yeah, Tom Cruise, when he meets you for the first time, how he remembers your name is he'll shake your hand, he'll get really close to you, step back, point, and say your name. That's his mnemonic. So he was, look at you, Christine. So that's the Ann Perkins. And then the second celebrity you mentioned was saxophonist Kenny G. Kind of like the energy, the way Chris Traeger speaks when he said, let's say, I would like water in a glass, lukewarm, in my hand right now. That kind of cadence of speaking. Or if you were like, hey, would you like some grapes? Oh, I love grapes. They're like nature's candy. You know, that kind of, that speech pattern that Traeger has, he said some of that energy was Kenny G energy. So Kenny G and Tom Cruise, I'm sure there were others, but those two that stuck out of my mind. And that was part of the basis of Chris Traeger. And he was just talking to me just like we're doing this now. And I was like, dude, Rob Lowe, you're awesome, man. I love you. You're great, man. And he's like, well, thank you. And then we're ready to roll. All right, here we go. And we're back. And a professional, consummate professional. Love it.
That is so awesome to hear. And honestly, that's one thing that I found in my experience of doing this podcast. And I like to always remind people that people on TV are people too.
They're people.
And, you know, ultimately, even the highest level of celebrity, I'm sure that some of us, you know, just normal people out in the world could relate to them on some level. So yeah. I think that that's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you get to see them. And I mean, they're still on, obviously, because they are aware people are watching them. But we get to see a moment. I mean, we got to see kind of, I would say, like the duality of Rob Lowe in a way. I like to say we saw the actor Rob Lowe, but at times we also saw the executive producer Rob Lowe because he's a producer on the show. And he had a, especially in the beginning of the show, it took a long time to film things because the crew's still trying to figure out how to, they were still figuring out the show during episode one. So things were taking a lot longer. So Rob Lowe had to kind of, because they were talking to him in his ear, and he kind of had to kind of get, you know, to the point quicker, I would like to say. He definitely spoke more, okay, what are we doing right now? There's too many of you talking. We need to get it together. What are we doing right now? Kind of. So he had to kind of be the leader and be like, what's going on right now? Somebody talk to me. Only one person speak to me. What are you doing? Kind of that. Very specific. But it was warranted because we were standing around or felt like, okay, this is taking way too long. So he had to step up. He had to be the producer and be like, all right, we need to move this along. We're literally, time is money. You could feel time, you know, money wasting. So he's like, yep, I get it. But after that first day, it got better. We didn't have to really, you know, worry so much about that. But yeah, we saw that. And then Rob Lowe just talking to us while the cameras were rolling. He really loved Tucker's pink suit. That pink suit, Rob Lowe loved it. The first time he came out and Sauce for the very first time. This wasn't on camera. The first time we see Rob Lowe, he sees us. His eyes go immediately to Tucker, like, oh, and he drops an F-bomb. He's like, oh, sorry, but that suit needs to be on TV. That suit was amazing. So he couldn't wait to get Tucker up there just for that pink suit alone. So he was impressed by that pink on pink on pink. Who wouldn't be, you know?
Exactly. Yes. Tucker, if you're watching this, 100% fabulous.
The involvement of the Pink Panther on set, he was the Pink Panther.
Yes. Like we mentioned earlier, one of many like fabulous personalities on the show. Honestly, you said the casting directors, I think that they did an amazing job. They really got some fantastic people. And I mean, the fact that y'all got along so well is just incredible. You know, as I said to Lindsay and Tom, somewhat restored my faith in humanity. So.
Yes. And not only that, I have a feeling, like I said, I can't prove any of this. I have a theory that maybe some of the producers like, oh, it's a bunch of Americans from different backgrounds. We put them in a room together, throw some money. They're going to fight. Americans fight. That's all Americans do. And then we didn't. And they had encouraged us. They're like, oh, hey, guys, we need you to talk a little bit more. But I'm really happy that they had encouraged us. It wasn't like, Americans are fighting. Just like we thought, oh, look at them. This person, this different background, this other background, just like we thought they would. That did not happen. They had to kind of, you know, encourage us. Yes, no, you could talk. Because it's a trivia show. We didn't realize it was a reality show. We're thinking like Jeopardy. Like, they don't really trash talk each other in Jeopardy. So we didn't realize what kind of story they were going for, because this show hasn't really existed except for in European form. And we didn't really get to see it. And of course, the European audience is different from American audiences, and as Fox, of course, they want a little bit more drama, but we don't know that. We're just like, oh, it's a trivia show. Good answer. Like Family Feud. Good answer. Yeah, you know. So, but here's the other thing, too. And one of the contestants, Eugene, Junk Drawer Items, who actually is a comedian, and I got his category, but Eugene was like, pay $250,000. It's a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. It's considerable. But after taxes and everything, it's not exactly quit your job money. It's not like millions. Now, if it was $4 million or $5 million, kind of like the Squid Game challenge, then it could have been a bit more, I would say cutthroat. Then it could have been more like, all right, you're on your own. But $250,000 was just enough where it is considerable, but it's not always cutthroat. Not to mention, we were in Ireland. We had passports. That means we've traveled the world. So we're not like, I would say like desperate, like, you know, I need this more than anything, or else I don't know where I'm going to go at all costs. I need this money. It wasn't that cutthroat feel, not at all. So I'm happy that, you know, kind of came across as, you know, we're all good natured. We're competitive. I mean, but at the end of the day, it was all just to make good TV and, you know, no hard feelings. And like you said, we're pretty much for the most part friends in the end, but nobody knows where Jasper went. We still have no contact with Jasper. The enigma that is Jasper, our first $20,000 winner. He actually lived in Ireland. So there were a few contestants that were Americans living in Ireland. There's like Jasper, Arthur, and a few others that were living in Ireland. So they just had to go where they were originally from in America. But to this day, Jasper's somewhere, maybe in Ireland. You know, who knows? But he was kind of quiet backstage. Him and Nick had some very good, educated conversation. I could listen to them. They almost had a podcast in themselves, because Nick is a professor. And Jasper was very smart, and they had some just amazing, just historical about the history of the world conversations. I was like, Nick and Jasper, I would just listen to you guys all day. You have just great, just the way they talk and just the information. But as soon as Jasper left, I haven't seen him since. So where is Jasper?
Where is Jasper? But yeah, if somehow Jasper is watching this, let everybody know where you are.
Yes, where in the world? Jasper.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you know, I loved hearing about these stories and, you know, your time on the floor, definitely memorable, you know, for everybody that was watching. So I'm excited. I mean, I hope that they bring it back. I thought that it was a really good show. I love that format for a trivia show. Yeah. You know, I think maybe there's, you know, some things that they might need to, like, you know, get tuned up a little bit for season 2, but you know, it was really entertaining. So I'm excited that you got the opportunity to be part of that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we haven't seen anything like this in the States before. And so we kind of set a precedent for any future. If there are other seasons, you know, we were kind of like the test subjects for, you know, future filmings and how this goes and how they get tightened up. And hopefully there could be redemption for some of us, like Sid, who blanked on nails. She knew nails. That kind of first let us know, like, oh, that podium is something different. Because down there, even on the floor, we're like, yeah, horse's nails. How did you know? Come on. And your brain, you don't realize what your brain's going to do when it's on the spot. And you're overthinking it. And sometimes it's the simplest answer. But you're just thinking a million different things, and literally the answer is right in front of you. But people will see, hopefully, if they do, you know, subsequent seasons, the contestants will see, oh, okay, yeah, this is different. And a lot of people have been reached out to me. Apparently, I am a fan favorite. Initially, I thought I was going to be the villain of the show. When I saw the first cut of my, you know, there's no stop in me, there's no stopping me, or I don't think you know what you're in for. Like, a lot of my one-on-one were, like, very aggressive. And I was like, oh, man, that's kind of like a, like you know, like a bad guy speech, or like the mark. And I knew I went on the streak, and I took out a lot of possible fan favorites, like Tucker and a few others, and took out Jasper and just a few others. I'm like, oh my gosh, I might end up being villain, the bad guy, because I take out a lot of people, and the my edits were kind of like very villainous. The camera angle, the Dutch angle felt like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be the bad guy. But then turns out I ended up being the fan favorite. Apparently a lot of my reactions have gone viral. Just a couple days ago, Snoop Dogg reposted something from the floor, and it had my reaction on it, and Saturday Night Live made fun of our show, and I could see a little bit of me, and I called it back in August in our group chat. I'm like, we could be parodied by SNL. I actually have a screenshot of that, and so, I mean, I didn't know for what, but I mean, if it's a big enough thing happening, and sure enough, it happened. But everything, and then just today, right before I got on this on the show with you, we saw Claire pointed this out, that the actress that plays Pam from The Office, Jenna posted our duel, me and Claire, because it had Dunder Mifflin and had The Office, and she's pointed at the TV. And I thought it was just somebody's, you know, friend or something. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, it's Pam from The Office. She actually is watching our show. She's watching us. So to see, like, the celebrities are watching us and chiming in, and the cultural, you know, I don't want to say impact, but the kind of, I don't know, blip on the radar, but we are officially pop culture being on the floor, and it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is super exciting. I hope that there is another season, you know, so we'll see what happens there. But for folks that are interested in, you know, following you, just let people know, like, where you're at on social media and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'm very active. Facebook, Gene Lionel McGee Jr. On Instagram, meme Gene McGee. I still run a meme account now. It's a Florida account. TikTok at Gene McGee. Recently, I was encouraged to do a cameo. So created a cameo account so I could do shout outs and advice for anybody. That's linked on all my social medias. Twitter, X, Gene McGee. I have all my socials, and it's interesting because I kind of sometimes do social media, but now I really have to do social media because everybody's reaching out to me. And I was like, oh, now I get why people say this is a job now, because now this is taking, a lot of my time trying to answer everybody and like, hey, this is my social media. You can reach me here. You can reach me, so. Now I'm really making a point to keep up with all my social media, and I'm very easy to find, easy to book as an MC host, because that's my skill set. I'm an MC host, so it'll be fun to see if they end up bringing some of us back, some of the all-stars of the floor, the bigger personalities, or the legends of the floor, or think of the professor of the floor. We all had these nicknames on the floor. Like the social media, Gene Lionel McGee Jr. On Facebook, at Gene McGee on Twitter X, meme Gene McGee on Instagram, Cameo, Gene McGee, in the place to be. That's just, amazing. Amazing.
Awesome. Well, I thank you so much for joining me. I hope that, my folks that, subscribers and things like that that watch really like this floor content, because I think it's an awesome show. So if people haven't already watched it, please make sure that you check it out. It's really just an excellent trivia show. And for those that are watching, please make sure that you like, subscribe, share, comment, all of that good stuff, so that we can keep growing this channel and bringing more awesome content to you. For everybody that is watching, thank you, and we will see everybody next time on the show.
See ya.